We have 10 companies that own the entirety of our food system. In the UK, the reason why they banned these is because they found that they cause hyperactivity in children. We're overdosing people on it. They are knowingly poisoning us at this point. You're either going to pay for it at the grocery store or you're going to pay for it significantly more later at the doctor's office. An American company is creating cleaner, healthier cereal for kids in other countries, and then they're creating a toxic version of it for here in the United States. Where is the outrage? Not only would they not speak to us, one of their employees held a sign in the window that said, "Get off our lawn." And the reason why they're doing this is because
you've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Courtney, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm very excited you're here. It's been a crazy week for you.
This has been such a wild week. It's been a wild month, if I'm being honest. I don't think I've ever flown so much for this movement, which is so cool.
Well, it's a very important movement. This is the first time, I actually got to give you props, shout out. First time my wife has ever felt compelled to come in and sit on an episode recording. Oh. She's here, a big fan of yours. And like we were saying, we've been very passionate about the sort of idea behind your movement, good, healthy, high quality food, particularly for us and our children. And I think what you guys are doing this week, particularly going at Kellogg's, is very important because most people are completely unaware of the arbitrary nature of what Kellogg's is producing for particular people in particular countries versus other countries.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you also for sitting in. This is so fun. This is actually how we got connected, was through your wife. So I'm super grateful. So for people listening that don't know what's going on right now. So Vani Hari, also known as the Food Babe, is a close friend of mine. And we spoke at the Senate a couple weeks ago. And at the Senate, she announced that her and Jason Karp, who's the founder of Hugh Kitchen, one of the founders, amazing chocolate bars, they announced that they were going to create a petition for Kellogg's to take their artificial food dyes and BHT out of their cereals here in America. Because what is happening right now is Kellogg's, an American company, is creating cleaner, healthier for you formulations of their cereal for kids in other countries, and then they're creating a toxic version of it for here in the United States, which to me is crazy because they're already creating this formulation for other countries. And the reason why they're doing this is because in places like the UK, Australia, they're banning these artificial food dyes. And you know what they're using instead of the artificial food dyes? They're coloring their cereal with carrot juice, watermelon juice, and blueberry juice. But here in America, we get artificial dyes that are made from crude oil. And then they're also adding a preservative called BHT in there, which is banned in a lot of other countries because it's being linked to stomach cancer.
Lovely.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So is this what we hear about, like red, what is it, red dye?
Yeah.
Six or
yeah, it's like red number four, yep. Yellow number five, blue number four. I think there's a bunch of different ones. And what were we gonna say?
Is this USDA regulation that's allowing this? Is this oil lobby trying to use byproducts of their crude oil to get it into the food so they can sell
it? I'm sure that's absolutely playing a role in that. The two main issues is, one, it's cheaper for them to do this here, mm-hmm. and legally they're allowed to because there is a concept in the United States called GRAS, which is generally recognized as safe. And what that means is that we will pretty much put anything in our food supply, generally recognize it as safe, and it isn't until it's proven to be guilty that we take it out of our food system later, which is crazy. And then you look at the UK.
It's generally recognized as safe.
Yeah, don't we're like, worry, generally it's okay. We think it's safe. I don't know about you, but I want to definitively know that it's safe before we put it into our food supply. And that's exactly what they're doing in the UK. It's the exact opposite. They wait up to eight to 10 years to introduce a new product or a new ingredient into their food supply because they want to actually do the research before they put it in there to find out if it's going to harm people. But here we put it in and then we find out later that it's harming people. And you know how hard it is to get out of the food supply after that? We saw this happen with trans fats, otherwise mm-hmm. known as hydrogenated oils. We found out later that those were absolutely detrimental to our cardiovascular system, and food companies were eventually required to take it out of their food. But also when they announced announced it, I don't remember the exact year, but they had like 5 years to take it out of their food. So it's crazy.
And that's what I am curious to find out, is like, how do we solve it? Because you think about like something like Kellogg's, all these large food companies, they have these basically supply chains, these manufacturing lines, and they definitely have a process where like just taking it out is probably not as easy as one would like it to be. But is, do you think Kellogg's is going to be forced to solve this problem, or is it competitors? Because that's what we've done, is competitors who are frying things and things like avocado oil or beef tallow, just alternative products, Siete, which just got bought by Pepsi, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Are you worried about that? Like,
you know, it's nuanced for me because we're so concerned about affordability and accessibility in this country. And the way that we get those products to become more affordable and more accessible is they get the, you know, they get the distribution through PepsiCo.
Economies of scale.
Yeah. So I'm kind of conflicted. I know the founders of Siete. I've known them for a long time and I love them. They're such a lovely family and I'm really stoked for them. And I think what's going to happen is it's going to make these products more accessible. I know a lot of people are concerned that they're going to change the ingredients. They're going to make them worse. So I do know that it's in the contract with PepsiCo that they're not allowed to touch the ingredients for life. But, you know, there is concern that they're going to start sourcing from, you know, cheaper and different, like it'll be the same ingredient, but will it be as high quality? We don't know. And, you know, only time will tell. So I get it. I'm kind of on the fence where I'm like, okay, it's going to be more accessible. People will be able to get it more. Like we'll be able to find Siete at convenience stores and, you know, 7-Elevens, which I think would be great. But we do have to worry a little bit about the quality. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is such a big overarching problem because predominantly, this is a Bitcoin podcast, and Bitcoin, what we really go after is like centralization of the money supply, like central banks, governments controlling money has led to a deprecation in the quality of our monies globally. Bitcoin is a distributed sort of response to that. And once you see it with money, you see it in other areas of life, and food being one of them. That's one of the massive problems in the food industry right now. It's hyper-centralized, whether it's via Pepsi, Kellogg's, what is it, four meatpacking conglomerates that run most of that.
Yep. And we have 10 companies that own the entirety of our food system. Just 10 of them. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And the, when it comes to like the solution of this problem, that's, I mentioned I had Sam from Shiretail Creek Farms on yesterday, regenerative farmer servicing the local Austin area. And I guess the question I have based off of this is like, that is direct to consumer, but the consumer has to make a conscious effort to go out and seek that. And you mentioned earlier, cost is a big thing that people have to be conscious of. And so it's just weighing the trade-off of how do you find quality food at an affordable price, particularly in an environment like today where inflation's high, people are struggling.
Yeah. I mean, look, I tell people all the time, you, first of all, it's about education and understanding how dire the situation is. Unfortunately, the situation that we're in right now, if you're not making time for your wellness, you are going to be forced to make time for your illness. You just are. Like people, I mean, just look around you. The obesity rates are rising like crazy. Cancer is skyrocketing. Autoimmune disorders, cardiovascular disease, like you name it. I mean, probably everybody listening knows a handful of people that are dealing with all of this stuff right now, you know? And so unfortunately, it's on us that we have to protect our health and become the CEO of our own health. And a lot of that requires making sure that we're sourcing high quality, real food. And another thing that, you know, I like to remind people of is that, look, there's no such thing as free lunch. You know, like you're either going to pay for it at the grocery store or you're going to pay for it significantly more later at the doctor's office. And people don't like to think about that. And a lot of people like to, you know, kick the can down the road and deal with it when the time comes. But I'm telling you, the time will come. It's not like if it's going to come, it will come if you're not paying attention, because unfortunately it's gotten so bad that we can't afford to not pay attention to it anymore.
No, it's not even arguable. I think it's a fact. It's going to cost you more down the line in healthcare costs.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you just look at like, I mean, Ozempic is more like an elective thing for a lot. Well, I don't know if I want to say it elective if you have diabetes, but I mean, those pens cost like $1,200 a month. You know, so it's like, are you going to spend that on high quality, organic, healthy meats and real food? Or are you going to spend that on medications? And are you going to put that back into the healthcare system and spend significantly more money, you know, on surgeries and pharmaceutical drugs and all these other things? Not to mention, you talk to anyone who's sick and who's going through something really major like cancer, they would do anything to not be in that position. They would pay any amount of money to be well.
Yeah.
You know?
And you mentioned Ozempic. Is that an example? I've heard both sides of the story of Ozempic, Wegovy, all the other similar, what is it,
GLP-1s.
GLP-1s.
Yeah.
Is that another instance of something that's been introduced to the market? We maybe don't have enough back-tested data to understand how it actually affects us.
So those ones are really interesting. I actually have a really good doctor friend. Her name is Dr. Tina. Mm-hmm. And she started diving into the research of this. And what these GLP-1s, they're peptides that our bodies actually create. Mm-hmm. Her argument, which I think is a pretty strong argument, based on the science and the data that she's been looking into, is that what's happening specifically things with like Ozempic and Wegovy is that we're overdosing people on it. Because essentially they're getting this dosing pen and everybody gets like the same dose. Mm-hmm. And she said that they're getting way too much. So she's arguing that if you get a really small amount of GLP-1s, and she's saying get it from a compounding pharmacy, because also, you know, with these big pharmaceutical companies, we don't know what kind of preservatives and other additives they're adding in. That's a big concern too. And she also thinks that that's probably part of the issue as well. And she's a huge advocate for getting really small doses of these GLP-1s just to stimulate the metabolism, help people get back on track. And you know what, to be honest, I kind of agree with her, because we're at this place right now where it is such a mess. So many people are so overweight. So many people are dealing with diabetes that it's not going to be as easy to turn this ship around without some sort of at least a little bit of like an intervention if you've gotten really too far. And this is coming from, let me be very, very clear, anybody that doesn't know about my message, I am number one for always and ever an advocate for cleaning up your diet and eating a whole real food diet. I am not here advocating for any sort of a pill for an ill, like that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that are so far down the road that maybe doing a small dose of a GLP-1 just to help them get back to a more balanced weight, I'm not super opposed to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kickstart, because the problem is massive. I mean, you mentioned the diabetes, the severe obesity. You look at childhood obesity, it's approaching 50%.
Oh yeah, it's approaching 50%. And Americans, adults are at close to 74% now. And you think about the small time frame that that's happened. I mean, I encourage people listening to go back and Google photos of people in the 70s on the beach. That's what I was going to say. You get
70s beach pictures, and then you fast forward today, the CNN, like bottom half of the body, B-roll clips. It's
unreal, and it happened so fast.
Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is here building the Bitcoin bank of the future. It starts with their vault product, a 2 of 3 collaborative custody vault, which allows you to hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. On top of this, they're building incredible products. They're trading products. You want to buy and sell Bitcoin, you can do it through their trading desk. If you buy Bitcoin directly into cold storage, if you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, you can borrow against your Bitcoin with their lending desk. They have an IRA product, which they recently dropped the price down to 21 cents. So if you want to roll your IRA from traditional assets into Bitcoin, Unchained makes that extremely easy. You're able to hold your own keys. Again, it's the bank of the future. Go to unchained.com. Use the code TFTC when you check out for any of their products. You'll get $50 off. Check out their concierge onboarding if you're looking to do it the right way. Unchained.com. Use the code TFTC.
The other thing that's really, I don't want to say nefarious, but disconcerting as an American citizen is the fact, I mean, you go back to the 70s, what was introduced then, the food pyramid, proved to be pretty objectively terrible advice.
Move
forward through time, all these preservatives, all this crap they're allowed to put in our food. I mean, one can make an argument that the regulatory environment that's been erected over the last 50 years is actively poisoning American citizens.
And you know what else happened around then too was the low-fat diet movement, and that really destroyed us too, because we need good healthy fats. Turns out they're imperative, and they also keep us at a healthy weight, which is really interesting. I was going to say something else and it totally left my brain.
Another thing that happened, have you read Matthew Leziak's Fiat Food?
No, I haven't even heard of that book.
So Matthew is an investigative journalist. He read the Fiat Standard, which is the book right next to that. And in that, in the Fiat Standard, they have a chapter called Fiat Food. And basically the thesis of the Fiat Standard is when we went off the gold standard, that's when we saw a bunch of negative externalities introduce themselves into the economy. I'm not sure if you ever heard of the site WTF happened in 1971.
No.
But you go back, you look at charts, health, economics, quality of life, birth rate, all of that, 1971. Many people have different arguments for what happened. Safe and Matthew were making the argument that it was because we went off the gold standard. And the argument that Matthew specifically makes is when we went off the gold standard, the government was put in this position where food costs were the most sort of important cost in everyday Americans' life at that point in time. And to make it seem like food costs weren't going down, they introduced the food pyramid and began loosening regulations so that you can get all this cheap preservatives and cheap crap into our food system. So it looked like food prices were staying flat to going down, when in reality, high quality foods like quality beef, eggs, quality chickens, high fat foods were going up, but that just wasn't being included in CPI and in the food pyramid. So they're actually actively pushing people towards this crap so that they could hide inflation when they ripped us off the gold standard.
That's crazy. You also think about too, so a lot of people probably don't know this, but we have cheaper food that's more accessible because we're paying subsidies to farmers and we're paying them. So what that means is we're using our own taxpaying dollars. So it's not even that we're not paying for it. We're just paying for it in a way that we're not seeing. We're paying these to farmers to grow specific crops like corn, wheat, and soy. Mm-hmm. And that's why when you pick up almost any packaged food, you'll see on the label, it says contains corn, wheat, and soy. And it's because we're paying subsidies to make these seem cheaper, but they're not actually that much cheaper because we're really just paying for them in a different way.
Yeah, it's not even, I would not argue, but I would imagine it's not even fully taxpayer funded. It's probably partly funded with tax dollars, but they probably just issue treasuries, raise cash and then funnel it there as well. And so that's why I love the intersection that the show has with individuals like yourself and others. Yeah. In the health conscious and the food conscious part of the world, because that's what we've been saying in this at the Bitcoin Commons. Like, Bitcoiners, like, we recognize that we messed up the money, and money has these negative externalities all throughout every area of our life. And food is something that we're very passionate about as well here in the Bitcoin community, healthy food. And I think there's some synergies to like line up, say, this problem's massive, and it's partly because they messed up the money. Like, you can go subsidize all this crap because you can just print money out of thin air.
So I don't know too much about this subject, and I wish I could speak more about it, but my fiance is like very, very into this. And he had me watch a documentary recently. Oh my God, I wish I could remember what it was called. And they were explaining this to me, and I don't even know if I could explain it back because it's a new concept to me, but essentially like how we're printing money and we're doing like IOUs between like the treasury and someone else.
Federal Reserve.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So Federal Reserve monetizes the treasury's debt. The treasury can issue debt, raise cash, and then the Fed will always be there to buy the bonds. So the Fed can create money, buy the bonds. And it's a whole racket, but we don't have to get deep into monetary economics.
But you're right. It is cool to see the parallels of it. It's I always say something similarly to what you said a minute ago, is that food was the first thing that opened my eyes to this, to the corruption of what was going on. And now I just see that it's copy and paste in almost every industry in the United States in some way or another. The corruption is really deep.
It's a problem when you have centralized forces. You can't centrally plan an economy. You can't centrally plan money, food, healthcare. Centralization ruins everything, in my opinion. But getting back to like it does feel like, despite everything we've just said, there is extremely positive momentum in the right direction. Like the noise that yourself, Dr. Means, and his sister, others have made, particularly on Capitol Hill a few weeks ago, people are connecting with it. Like my wife was saying right before we started recording, she's seeing friends in her circle that would never talk about this stuff actually sharing it and saying, oh my God, I can't believe this is true. And that's one thing that is exciting. I don't like to get too political, but leading up to this election, the fact that MAHA has become a theme is something that I'm just extremely thankful for.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited about this whole movement. I feel like I have been waiting like 15 years for this to happen. I mean, and I feel like I've been just like screaming into a void, and nobody has been listening to me. I'm like, you guys, this is really bad. We need to pay attention to this. You know, I mean, when we have 77% of our young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 that are ineligible to serve military, that's a national security issue. This is a really big deal. And nobody has been talking about this on a political platform until this year. So when RFK came out and aligned himself with Trump, and we don't have to go political. I'm happy to go as political as you want, but we also don't have to, because I know it can be very divisive. But I am here for one specific movement, and that's the Make America Healthy Again. Because like I said, this to me is the most pressing issue that we're dealing with right now. And there is basically one person talking about it on a political stage.
Yeah.
It's crazy that there's not more.
And it's such a stark juxtaposition to the last time I can remember health being sort of front and center in the political stage is when Michelle Obama labeled tomato sauce as a acceptable vegetable, a healthy vegetable that can be injected into our public school lunch system.
I want to talk about that for a second, because Michelle Obama was this hero, right? Where everybody was like, oh, she's trying to get kids healthier. And let me tell you that she sold us out. And I was pissed off about it, because in the very beginning, I was fully on board with her. I was like, yes, like she was talking about the food and she was saying that we need to get all the preservatives out. And there's a big issue here. We're eating a lot of processed foods. And then all of a sudden she kind of disappeared for a second. And then she came back and she was like, it's all about moving our bodies. And then her movement was sponsored by, I don't remember the exact brands, but it was, you know, Kellogg's and General Mills and of the that kind of nature. And essentially what happened is, Big Food, who has a lot of money, and when I say Big Food, I'm talking about these big conglomerates that I mentioned earlier, like the 10 companies that own our food system, got a hold of her messaging and they said, no, we can't get these kids to stop eating our processed foods. So we're just going to tell everybody that it's actually that they're not moving their bodies enough and they need to be more active. I'm not vilifying getting more active, but we need to start at the source, which is the food. And her whole movement was co-opted by that. And now she just released a healthier for you soda or something for children that has so much sugar in it. Sorry, I am not stoked with her whole movement, and it was completely co-opted by Big Food. And this is what we're talking about, the centralization of all of it. These companies have so much money and so much power that they are lobbying in Washington, and they're getting politicians and first ladies and presidents in their back pocket.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole messed up thing about the interconnected system, is because they can issue treasuries, print money, give it to these companies in subsidies, and then the companies can then use that money partly to grow the shit food and then partly to give it to the politicians. So they get their way.
They're paying for their campaigns.
And with this in mind, like, what is the response from Big Food been like to the noise that you guys have been making over the last month? I mean, for years, but particularly the last month.
So we should talk about Monsanto in a second, but I'll talk about specifically what's happening right now. So with Kellogg's, they have been deafeningly silent, which is going to be very interesting what's going to see in the next couple weeks, because Vani Hari, the food babe, has done petitions like this before. She went to Kraft headquarters in, I think I want to say it was like maybe 2017, something like that. And she only had a handful of people with her, by the way. When we showed up yesterday, we had 1,000 people with us, 1,000 plus. We had over 400,000 signatures from Americans that are concerned about these dyes. And they all signed the petition, and we showed up. Not only would they not speak to us, one of their employees held a sign in the window that said, "Get off our lawn." That isn't, I mean, this is a really bad look for them.
Okay, boomer.
Literally. I mean, Kraft opened their doors for Vani and at least let her in, and she got to have a full-blown conversation with them. And you know what? Actually, they ended up taking their dyes out, which was really incredible because there was so much pressure from the public. Kellogg's wouldn't even have a conversation with her. This is what's so crazy to me. Now, this is horrible, but you know what Kellogg's would have done? They should have done, if they were smart, they should have said, okay, we're going to entertain this, and then, you know, tell her that we're going to take these out and we're listening to you and whatever. And then they never do, but they look like heroes. Now they really look like villains, which honestly, I said yesterday, this could not have been a better response, because I think that if they had said like, yeah, we're listening and we're going to take it out, and never did, I mean, that would have been horrible, right? But now people are going to boycott them, and I think they're going to be forced to do something. I mean, they're going to be forced to do it eventually, because California just signed a law that they're no longer allowing these artificial dyes in their food at schools.
Doesn't happen often, but props for props are due to the state of California.
That's like the first good thing Newsom has ever done. I was really shocked by that, actually. I was like, oh, wow, he actually did like one good thing.
But it is astonishing that we have to fight this hard to get these poisons out of our food system. I mean, you talk about the direct health effects, particularly like cancer, inflammation, autoimmune issues. But then you look at the education system too, and what's not talked about as most is like how hyperactive this makes kids. And you look at testing scores throughout the years and they're going down, and people are like, what's going on? Public school system's getting worse. It's obviously a multifaceted problem. And I think one of the biggest issues is the food. And I've experienced this firsthand in college. I volunteered at an inner city lacrosse program in Chicago, and I'd travel to the south side and west side of Chicago and spent 2 or 3 days a week after school with these kids for 2 years. And that was like the one thing I noticed, that they couldn't pay attention in their food source. They lived in food deserts, so they're getting honey buns and sugary drinks at the gas station before they came to school. And people are like, oh, why can't these kids pay attention? It's like they're eating shit. Like,
I mean, we're hopping them up on sugar, and then we're hopping them up on these dyes, which, by the way, in the UK, the reason why they banned these is because they found that they cause hyperactivity in children.
Really?
We already know. Yes, there's studies that show this. And then I have, you know, of course, this is anecdotal, but we have the studies to back it up from the UK. And then anecdotally, I can't tell you how many messages I've been getting from moms recently that have said, thank you so much for doing this. I mean, I had this one mom the other day that wrote me, and she goes, I know this sounds kind of crazy, but every time my kid has this artificial dye, she comes home and she was like, it's like The Exorcist. Like, she has these crazy tantrums. And so many parents are starting to make these connections that their kids will go to a birthday party and they'll have all these artificial dyes and the candy and, you know, the cake icing and all this stuff. And they said they'll come home and they have full-blown meltdowns.
Yeah. And you think, like, about the second and third order knock-on effects. It's been completely misdiagnosed, where it's like, oh, your kid has ADHD. We need to put them on Adderall starting at age 12. And then you have a whole generation of individuals, millennials specifically. I mean, Adderall was very prevalent when I was in high school.
Oh yeah.
And you have a generation of adults now who've been on this amphetamine for 2 decades.
Yeah.
And what are the long-term effects of that? What are the long-term health costs of that? And it's like, we're not striking at the root of the problem, and you're trying to treat it with pills and other remedies, and
exactly.
It's completely neglecting the core of the problem, which is we've messed up the food, which provides us with the energy that allows us to go use our brains to do things throughout the world.
Exactly. Isn't it mind-blowing that it's taken us this long to even acknowledge and recognize that the foods that we're putting in our body have an effect on our brain and our overall health?
Yeah.
It's like, how, I don't know. I just, it's mind-blowing to me that as a society and a collective that we haven't figured this out sooner. And I would argue that we, on a large scale, haven't even figured it out yet, because there's people like myself that are fighting for this and then being called anti-science and, oh, we're fear-mongering and, you know, the whole slew of things.
How are people calling you anti-science? What are the arguments they're making?
Because the big argument right now, and actually Kellogg just gave a statement yesterday to a news outlet, the big argument is that they are going by the laws and the regulations that have been set by the FDA and the USDA. But like we've been talking about this whole episode, I mean, look, there's this common misconception that people think that if it's on the shelf in America, that it's been vetted for and that it's safe. I'm here to tell you, it's just not the case. The FDA themselves, they have admitted themselves that they do not have the manpower to overlook all of the additives that are in our food supply. I'll give you an example. In the UK, they allow around 300 additives in their food supply. Mm-hmm. We allow between 3,000 and 4,000 additives that are allowed.
10x.
Yeah. And it's because we have this system called GROS that I told you earlier that we're just like, oh, just, you know, let it in and we'll figure out later if it's bad.
This RIP was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on our risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile, Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with ZapRate. Go to ZapRate.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. ZapRate.com/TFTC. $40 off.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
A lot of these additives are intentionally put in to make these foods more addictive.
So 100%. Well, and that's what's crazy about the artificial food dyes in particular. They serve no value whatsoever outside of cosmetic. They don't preserve them. They don't make them taste any better. It's fully just to make them brighter colors. And Kellogg's has also admitted that they've done studies on kids and the kids or gravitate towards the higher, like the brighter, more like neon colored food dye. So that's the thing, is that it directly affects their profits because they know that the kids are going to reach more for the brightly colored stuff. And that's why they put it in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's very predatory.
It's incredibly, it's incredibly predatory.
Which, I mean, getting to the solution of the problem, I mean, my wife and I very focused on this. Like, it has to, parents have to take responsibility in some regard and really say, no, we're going to actively and consciously avoid this stuff and be the adults in the room when the boys are reaching for the brightly colored things in the middle of the grocery aisle and say, no, we don't need that.
Yeah. And look, I'm not a parent yet. I hope to be one someday. I can only imagine how hard that is. I used to nanny.
It's very hard.
I used to nanny, and I know a little bit about, you know, taking them to the grocery store and fighting with them because I'm like, no, your mom doesn't want me to buy this for you. And also just knowing what it would do to their bodies. I know that it's hard. But again, like you said, you are the adult in the room. And I don't understand what's happening with parents right now. Like, I'm not trying to like vilify or shame them, but it feels like there's this thing happening right now where they're letting the kids drive the car. And I don't understand why that is. I don't know if parents are like scared that their kids are going to hate them or.
Oh, have you heard of the gentle parenting?
I was just going to say the gentle parenting.
We hate the gentle parenting.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of that at all.
You sit down. Hey, I know you're a little frustrated right now. And, I understand. I have compassion. I feel for you. It's just, not the way I think. Well, I prefer the French way of parenting, which is like, you are on this journey with me. I am the adult. And
but look, you're the adult. These kids don't know any better. Their frontal lobes aren't even formed yet. Like, your entire role as a parent is to protect your kids from being harmed. That's literally your only role. And you can't, your kids don't know enough. They don't know that they're being harmed by these products. And I'm sorry, unfortunately, your kids are being harmed by these products and you have to be the adult in the room and you have to say no, because if that's your number one role as a parent, is to protect your kids.
Yeah. And anybody listening out there doesn't understand, humans, we have the hardest job of this. If you're an animal, it takes like, what, 6 months for your fawn or your doe to be able to go out and into the world by themselves. Humans, literally 25 years until your brain's fully formed.
I know.
It's,
and it's, you know, and that's one of the things you sign up for to be a parent. And it's the harder part of your role. But let me tell you, I had a mom growing up who was very on food and nutrition since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate. My mom was making everything from scratch. I mean, I remember very vividly her cranking out homemade pasta on the counter, and I'd be sitting on the counter like catching this like pasta that she made from scratch. And I know not everyone has that. But I was really upset as a kid with my mom because I had this one girlfriend who was getting Burger King, I mean, 4 to 5 times a week. And this friend of mine has struggled with her weight her whole life. She's struggled with health issues her whole life. And I was so mad at my mom when I was little, and I would get in fights with her and I'd be like, I don't understand. I want the Dunkaroos and I want the Burger King and I want all this stuff. But when I grew up and I realized how hard my mom fought for my health, I mean, I'm going to get emotional about it. That's the best. That's the greatest gift my mom has ever given me. Yeah. That's truly the best gift you could ever give your children. So if your children are fighting you on it right now, one day they will be so grateful that they're not infertile like all their friends are, that they're not struggling with their weight, that they don't have autoimmune conditions and heart issues because you actually protected them from this annihilation that's happening in our food.
Don't want to make her blush in front of a very proud husband. That's
our oldest's favorite thing to do is make pasta and meatballs with my wife.
Also, get your kids involved.
He's got his own apron. He's got his own set of plastic knives.
I love that.
He gets into it. And
get your kids involved, because that's really how they will be more excited about the food. Because if you get them involved, and they're going to want to eat what they make.
Yeah. And it's important. Like, the decisions you make, I think that's what we're coming to learn. Decisions you make in these early years, the most formative years. I mean, particularly like ages 0 to 6, when their brains are forming as rapidly as they are. Like, yeah, the decisions you make in these early years have a compounding effect down the line.
And they do.
And people are just feeding their children shit. And we're not saints. Like, we certainly have our moments of weakness where it's like, all right, we're going to stop at In-N-Out on the way home. But I think it's a balance and a trade-off that you really have to focus on and put effort into.
Exactly. Look, I'm of the mind, like, I don't sit here as a perfectionist either. I think some people see my account online and they think that I'm just like this, you know, rigid person about everything. I'm not. I eat out with my friends and I don't ask what the cooking oils are. And, you know, like, sometimes, like, you do the best you can. My thing is, like, control the controllables. Control the things that you, like, 100% have control over. And you have 100% control over everything that comes in your home. So do that. Maybe do a thing where, like, you make sure that you're eating mostly whole real foods at home. You're bringing in the best groceries that you can. You're getting the highest quality meats. You're buying, you know, whole real foods. That way your body is resilient. And then when you go out to eat, you can have a free for all and go to In-N-Out and do that. You know, my thing is, like, just don't go to In-N-Out every day.
Yeah.
Cook as many meals as you can at home. That way, when you do want to go out and enjoy things with your friends or your family, you can. Your body's resilient.
Mm-hmm. And so, with what's going on right now with Maha picking up steam, what is your hope for the next 6 months, 1 year, five? Like, how, like, where do you want this momentum to go? And what actionable thing, particularly out of this Kellogg's event, do you want to see, or are you hopeful for?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I'm hoping that more Americans are waking up to what's actually going on, because I think the corruption runs so deep in our government and our regulatory bodies that I have a little bit of hope. I have a lot more hope if RFK is able to get into that office, that we're actually going to be able to clean from the inside out. I'm actually incredibly hopeful with RFK Jr. on our side, but I also think a lot of this is going to have to come from the bottom up, where we're going to have to essentially squeeze we're going to have to take away the profits from these companies. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that I love to remind people all the time, that you as a consumer have a lot of power in this, actually. Jason Karp, who I mentioned earlier, he's the founder of Hugh Chocolate. So he's been in this world for a long time. And he said at our Senate hearing, he said, you know, if some of these companies lose just 5% of their sales because people are saying, like, we don't want to buy this anymore until you take this crap out, they will change. Because he said even 5%, they're going to go, whoa, 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 whoa. Because he said he's seen it before. So if we just start demanding better from these food companies by saying, we're not going to do this anymore, we're not going to buy this anymore, and we're not going to allow you to poison us anymore, and you start putting your money into these amazing companies like that farm, the farmers that you were just talking about, or, you know, find local organic farmers and ranchers that are actually growing real food and are creating food with love and with your health in mind, we actually have the power to make a pretty big change in this movement. So I'm hoping to see a little bit of both. I'm hoping to see some of these regulatory agencies and bodies being held accountable, draining the swamp, if you will, getting these corrupt people out of there that don't care anything about our human health and that are just taking profit from all these, you know, large companies like Monsanto and Bayer now. And then I'm also really hoping to see a movement from the American people that are just like, we've had enough, we're demanding better for us.
Yeah. You'd think, some people are still have their head in the sand, a little cognitive distance, but what the FDA was pushing between the years of 2020 and 2023, you think people would wake up and say, maybe they don't have our best interests at heart.
Oh my God. All they care about is profits. Literally, it's all they care about. Well,
it's a revolving door. You literally have somebody go straight from the FDA to the board of Pfizer.
I just talked about that on another podcast. I don't think people understand how insidious it is. And I don't know if it's that... I think maybe some people can't handle, because it's like evil, and it's hard to understand that this is happening, but it is, like you said, we saw it happening during COVID, and you have to think about it from a corporation standpoint. People don't know you as an individual person. They're not seeing these as like human beings, that their lives are being affected. They're just seeing their numbers that are coming in, you know, and they have quotas that they have to meet. They're seeing the quotas. They're not seeing like, oh, you know, your dad died from this.
Yeah. You are a cell in an Excel spreadsheet to them.
Exactly.
Not even a whole cell. You're just part of the number in the cell.
Yeah. You're just a number on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And that's hard for a lot of people to swallow. And I get it, but it's also like, it's the reality of the situation, yeah. You know?
No, we're talking the same language. We're sympathetic. Exactly what we say. You have to defund these people at the end of the day. And if you can't do it via political means, like literally going through the political process to get people in position to cut these agencies, which I actually am hopeful that it will happen this time around. If Trump gets elected, like you said, it has to be ground up too. You have to attack from all angles, from that angle, educate, try to work through the political process, but then grassroots. And that's why Bitcoin, like if Bitcoin's successful in replacing the dollar as a reserve asset, they can't print Bitcoin to subsidize high fructose corn syrup and the big pharma industry. It sort of defangs their ability to do that and forces them to make good decisions and allocate money appropriately.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting to see what happens with all of that world with the Bitcoin and decentralization banking and all that. Like I said, I don't know much, but my fiance is so into it and I'm like, wow, that's cool. The connection you just made with the food is really interesting. My fiance will be stoked to hear that.
They had to keep inflation down, so they had to put a bunch of crap in to make it. They call it hedonic adjustments. The Fed does, or the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who creates the CPI. They create these hedonic adjustments where in 1971, they had a ribeye in the basket of goods that was tracking inflation. Hmm. But throughout time, they use hedonic adjustments, and that ribeye is now like ground beef or Kellogg's cereal. And so they're basically changing the quality of the goods in the CPI to make it look like inflation's lower. But really, if you want the highly nutritiously dense foods, like those numbers have gone astronomical.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Courtney, thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you.
Are you, you've got a busy schedule ahead of you, correct?
I do. Up until this election, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. It's been really cool to see. There's been this little Make America Healthy Again coalition that's been formed. And it was really, Callie Means has kind of been spearheading all this because he's consulting with RFK Jr. now about like certain policies that need to be changed. And we have this little group of people with his sister, Dr. Casey Means, Will Cole, everyone that spoke at the Senate, basically, like Brigham Bueller, who's amazing. And then obviously, of course, RFK Jr. And so we're hoping to really move the needle on all of this. So we'll see.
What policies do you think need to be changed out of the gate? What are like the low hanging fruits?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I don't know if I can think of direct policies, but I would say more in general, what needs to happen is we need to have people in our regulatory agencies that are not corrupted and being paid for by big pharma companies like Pfizer. Like you said, there's this whole revolving door between Pfizer and FDA. I mean, that's happening across the board. Like we're seeing that with food companies, with big pharma companies, with big agricultural companies. So I think in general, we need to get the corrupt people out of there, and we actually need to get people in place that really care about our health and that are.
Do you think we even need the FDA?
That's such a good question.
We went through this with baby formula, Serenity Kids, the baby formula that we used with our children, and it's not FDA approved, but it's, I think, inarguably the most nutritionally dense, not filled with corn syrup and seed oils.
Exactly. They use a healthier oil. They use a couple of healthier oils, and yeah, it's like grass fed milk. So I do believe that we need to have an FDA, but I believe that they need to completely be uprooted and their entire prerogative needs to be changed. So like, for example, they need to be in charge of making sure that glyphosate isn't ending up in our food. They need to be making sure that genetically modified organisms aren't in our food, like things like that, where they're not regulating any. I mean, they don't even, or like
turning
lead.
The frogs gay.
The water's turning the frogs gay. Oh my God, it's so funny. I know. But you know what's crazy is that is
true.
It's
Alex Jones was right again.
Yeah, it's a chemical called atrazine that's ending up in our water supply, and it's similar to like glyphosate and all these other chemicals that are ending up in our food.
I was half joking. I mean, it is true. It's happening.
Yeah,
the other, like, accountability is what I want to see. And like, thank God I brought this up before you left. But like fluoride, last week they just come out and they're like, oh yeah, we've been calcifying your amygdalas for the last 50 years. That's pretty bad for you. It's lowering IQs. And like, all right, thanks for letting us know. But what are the repercussions of just nonchalantly admitting that to the country?
Oh yeah. And they're just like, oh, anyways, like, and then they get a little slop on the wrist, or, you know, maybe they don't get anything.
Government, like, nobody's holding them accountable.
I know. And it's so maddening because that's one of the ones that,
and that was the NIH, correct? I believe came out and admitted that.
I think it was the NIH. And there was also a Cochrane report that just came out about it a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, that's crazy. There's so many of these kind of things happening, and then they're not even being held accountable at all. Even though, like, fluoride, for example, this is something I've been talking about for 15 to like 18 years, and I've been called crazy, I've been called a conspiracy theorist, all this stuff. Like, this is stuff that we know. We already know that it's harming people, but it's taking so long for our regulatory bodies to get on. And a lot of it is because there's so much industry funding that, you know, they're blocking. Like, I'm assuming, I don't know, but I'm assuming the American Dental Association probably has been trying to block this from coming out. Like, there's industries involved that don't want to have to change their ways.
Yeah. And it is a racket too, because you go to the dentist and you tell the dentist you're getting your kid's teeth checked up. You're like, don't give them any fluoride. And they're like, what? And
they're like, your kids are,
they lambast you. Similarly, like, you're in the delivery room, you're like, I don't want my kid to get the Hep B shot like 30 seconds out of the womb. They're browbeating you. And that's the, particularly like on the big pharma hospital system side, there is this, and probably the dental side too, there is this economic incentive to push this stuff on people, which is, again, going into incentives and the interworkings between these different actors. Like, the incentives are completely borked, where they're not really incentivized to help the end customer, the patient. They are incentivized to enrich each other.
Exactly. Like I said earlier, they have all these quotas to meet, pharmaceutical drugs to sell. Like, doctors have a quota they have to meet every month with certain pharmaceutical companies, and it's not in the best interest of our health. And I was actually having a conversation with somebody the other day about this. What makes me so mad is that this is stunting our ability to progress science forward right now. Because essentially what's happening is we're finding out things like, for example, that fluoride is actually lowering our kids' IQs. We're finding out that glyphosate is causing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but these industries have so much money that they're blocking this from coming out in the public. So now they're blocking the studies from being made. We're also blocking any sort of scientific moving forward in order to find new ways to do it better. That's the problem, is we're blocking all of this. So we're not even able to, one, get the education out to people to let them know that they're being harmed. And then two, we're not funding anything to figure out, like, okay, so now we know that this is bad. How can we do this better without harming people? Yeah. You know, like hydroxyapatite. We can replace fluoride with hydroxyapatite, and it remineralizes the bones, and it works great. In my opinion, I think it works better than fluoride does. I've been told this by dentists. I know I'm not a dentist, but this is what I've been told. And then it's not harming your body like fluoride is.
I was completely unaware of hydroxy.
Yeah, it's called hydroxyapatite. So there's a bunch of different toothpaste companies that make fluoride-free toothpaste, and they put this element called hydroxyapatite in there instead. And actually, if you want to find a dentist that uses it, you can look up biological dentists. And I haven't looked in Austin, but I've been able to find one in Denver. I've found one in LA, and they generally use hydroxyapatite over fluoride.
All right, that's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good to know. And think about where we would be as a society if we didn't have these poisons in our life.
I know. And people would be thriving.
Well, that, like, people would be thriving. And I think we just have to accept there's nothing we can do. It's happened to us for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. But educate people, make them aware of this, and then paint a picture of, once we get all this crap out of our lives, like, how healthy would society be? What would that do for healthcare costs? What would that do for the ability for young individuals to actually develop a fully functioning brain and think clearly and not be hyperactive? Like, what knock-on effects does that have on society more broadly?
Oh my God. I mean, think of all the innovation that we could have, you know, be having, like, to come out of America. But, you know, you look at also, like, we haven't even talked about this all, but mental health. Like, mental health is I mean, it's really bad, especially among teenagers and young adults right now. And a lot of it is connected back to the food, and people don't want to admit it. But look, we have a direct connection between our gut and our brain, and it's called the vagus nerve. And it runs directly from your gut to your brain. They say that our gut is our second brain, and we produce our hormones like serotonin, the happy hormone, in our guts. Also, our immune system is about 70% located in our gut. All of this is connected. And for some reason, as a society, as a whole, we don't want to recognize that. And I don't understand why, but it is. It's hindering us in every way possible. I mean, all of our young adults, their kids, their brains are inflamed, and no wonder they can't pay attention. And it's hindering us as a society.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, mental problems. Here's an SSRI. It's like, oh.
Like, that's the best we can do. And look, I think there's a time and a place for them, but I think that we're handing them out like candy, and we're handing them out to people that are just severely inflamed. And if they could just get their guts in order and eat a healthier diet, many people may not even need it.
Yeah. And it is, again, going back to millennials, I feel like our generation particularly were fed all of this as a solution. Now, like, looking around, a lot of individuals that I know who have been on this stuff for decades and are trying to start families and are trying to wean themselves, they're finding it extremely hard. It's not easy. It has,
I think. that's the problem, you know. Like, I never want to vilify anybody's path, and I don't want to vilify, you know, modern medicine. I'm so grateful we have it, because we wouldn't be here without things like antibiotics, right? And amazing progress that we've made in that realm. But we're also in other ways stunting ourselves, because we don't know the long-term effects of a lot of this stuff. And if there's another way out, and if we're able to heal our bodies in other ways without having these pharmaceutical interventions that come with side effects. Think about all the drug commercials, and you hear them list off all the side effects. I'm sorry, there's not a single pharmaceutical drug on this planet that doesn't have side effects. Well,
that's, I mean, we probably don't have time to fully jump down that rabbit hole, but we're the one of two countries in the world that can actually market pharmaceuticals.
Us and New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that will change too. That's another thing you asked me earlier. I'm hoping that will change.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, and we could change. That's the thing, is so much of this stuff we could literally change overnight. We could change it overnight.
Yeah.
We just block those ads from being able to be shown, I mean, in the U.S.
Maybe, like, 98% of the world has that law in place.
Literally. And then people wonder why we're the most overly medicated country. It's because we have direct-to-consumer ads with Big Pharma.
Yeah. You go, oh, I saw this on TV. Can I have that? Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm going to get a little kickback on it. So here you go.
And what makes me so mad is people are not being communicated with the fact that there are other ways out of this. Like, there are other ways that you can deal with this kind of stuff. Obviously, again, there's always maybe a time and a place for it, but so many people are coming in with so many issues, and doctors are just handing them like drugs like candy instead of asking them, like, how's your sleep? What's your diet look like? Maybe we should run some tests. Let's look and see if you have any vitamin deficiencies.
That's been one of the most amazing things about Austin, is that there are doctors. We've been blessed finding doctors that approach health this way and treating ailments this way. And that's another thing that makes you whole. There's a lot of black pills and dooming going on, but there is a lot of optimism, a lot of white pills out there. And I do think they're, whether it's individuals like yourself, our family, making the conscious decision to eat healthier and live a healthier lifestyle, I'm also seeing it, like, on the doctor front. There are definitely still a majority of doctors who are stuck in that hyper-industrialized system that's grown up over many decades. But there are doctors out there with consciences that are really not only providing a good service, but marketing too, because more and more people are looking for it. And so there's an opportunity out there, if you are a doctor with a conscience, to actually build a good business, because people are starving for good information and good advice.
Yeah. And look, I'll say about doctors, I think they all start out with really good intentions. What happens is they end up in this system that's been co-opted by Big Pharma, and then their hands are tied behind their backs. I'm actually doing a podcast episode with a guy tomorrow. His name is Brigham Buehler. He's been on Joe Rogan talking about this, actually, because his world, he was a drug rep for, I believe it was Eli Lilly. And he started seeing the inner workings of how corrupt, you know, our Big Pharma is and our insurance companies, and how, like, once you're, well, first of all, you go through the medical system, the schooling, the majority of your education has been funded by these Big Pharma companies. So they're getting their education from the pharmaceutical companies themselves. They're essentially being taught to treat symptoms with a pill. So they start to match symptoms with a pill instead of like, oh, that symptom, maybe something's happening in the body. And again, I'm not vilifying the doctors for this, but they go in with good intentions and then they come out indoctrinated in this system that they're sometimes maybe not even fully aware that they're not helping their patients.
We could dive down a deep Rockefeller rabbit hole.
Oh, God, the Rockefeller stuff is...
Because that's what started all this, right?
I know.
They funded it back, what, in the 20s or early 1910s?
They co-opted the medical system and essentially they took out any sort of natural holistic remedy because they were like, we want to cut all of this out. Mm-hmm. They called it quack science and said, we're just going to start, you know, putting everybody on pharmaceutical drugs. And I can't remember, there's parts of the stories that I don't remember specifically, but there was something with like crude oil, how they were able to start creating.
They had Standard Oil,
their
monopoly, and they needed something for the byproducts of that oil production.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Because I think this was also around a time when there was like, you know, they called them like the witch doctors and all that. And people there were people in that
snake
movement.
Snake oil salesmen.
Exactly. That were truly harming people, you know? And so obviously everybody jumped on because they're like, okay, these people are harming people. And, you know, they're selling them tonics and shit that doesn't actually work. But the issue is that then we also took out all this wisdom this ancient wisdom that we've had passed down.
Over millennia.
Yeah, we've had passed down forever, you know, that all of us are born with. We have this innate wisdom on how to take care of ourselves and how to feed ourselves, you know, and also like I'm of the mind that nature gives us everything that we need, you know. Think about honey, for example. Like this is a perfect example. If you're dealing with allergies, go get a honey from a local community near you, and that will actually help treat your allergies that you're dealing with in your area that you're living in. And it's things like that where I'm like, we could never recreate that as humans because we don't even understand how that works.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I'm from Philadelphia. Originally, I was home last weekend for a wedding and had an allergy attack and asked my mom where I could get some local honey and explained to her that's why I wanted it. And she was like, are you crazy?
That's
like,
amazing.
No, this is because I have it. When we first moved down here, cedar fever hit me like a ton of bricks. And going to the local farmer market and finding local honey actually helped. Like
isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I haven't had cedar fever in a couple of years.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's little things like that. And we just completely rid the entire medical system of that. And now we call that quack science. And it's like, how do people think that we got here as humans for thousands of years before we had all these medical interventions? And again, because people come at me so hard for this, I'm not vilifying modern medicine. All I'm saying is that we need to find a balance in the middle of it where we need to recognize that, you know, the majority of pharmaceutical drugs, they come from compounds that naturally occur already in nature. That's how they start making their pharmaceutical drugs. And then they make them synthetically. So it's like
a higher margin on that.
Exactly. That's the issue right there is that they cannot patent things that were made in nature. So what they do is they try to copy them so they can patent them and then put a high price tag on it and make money off of it.
Yeah. That's another whole part of the whacked incentives is the patents on this stuff. And it does take a lot of R&D to make this stuff and get it to market. And so there is an argument, like they invested the capital, they should be able to charge for a certain amount of time to make a profit. But again, it's the root of the problem that they're just trying to replicate things that already naturally exist in nature and they're preventing you from accessing that. That's where the incentive is completely whack.
Yep. And then they create narratives around that it's dangerous and it's anti-science to go for the natural things.
Raw milk, the biggest psyop. It's just milk. It was just milk for thousands of years.
I know. Yeah. That one's been a wild one to see because they are literally sending, I don't know what governing body it is. Is it the FDA that's going after them? I think it's the FDA that's going after them. They're going after these small local farmers.
Well, in Pennsylvania, Amos Miller... I think it's the like attorney general office in Pennsylvania is going after him specifically.
You know what really pisses me off about this? We have people literally dying from fentanyl every single day on our streets, and they're more worried about people consuming raw milk.
Yeah.
You know how many people have died from raw milk this year? Like one. I think it's in the last like 10 years, it's been like one person.
And well, so I had
a reporter covering the Amos Miller case, and they're trying to tie it to him, coming from this farm. And it turns out it was a 90-year-old woman who had drank the milk like 2 months prior, and she died of something obscure in the middle of the night in Florida, like 1,000 miles away, a couple months later, and they tied it and back to him. Yeah.
See, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're in this weird space right now where we're vilifying all of the foods that we've been consuming for thousands of years and blaming them for modern diseases. And this is, so obviously we're vilifying raw milk right now. We're also vilifying eggs and butter and red meat and telling people that they're causing the modern diseases that we're dealing with. And back to what I just said, how are we justifying that we have all these people dying from fentanyl, and then our regulatory bodies are going after these small farms that are mad about raw milk, and we're telling everybody that ground beef and eggs are less healthy for you than Lucky Charms, and that eggs and ground beef are causing heart attacks?
And if they're not causing heart attacks, they're causing global warming.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started.
The cow farts. We gotta kill all the cows.
I can't. No, it's our industrialization of our modern farming that's causing that. And it's cars.
I mean, I think it's all aside. I think we're going to be fine. But coming after cow farts for global warming, it's like they literally eat grass and produce more grass, which pulls oxygen, pulls CO2 and create CO2 from the atmosphere, creates oxygen for everybody. It's insane. It's like everything across the board that we've discussed, it's a combination of don't believe your lying eyes that good food is not actually healthy for you, despite the fact that you're chiseled and you look good. Nobody's saying this to me, but there's no corruption here. We're looking after your health. The FDA, the pharmaceutical industry, the food industry, we're all looking after your health. Don't worry. And when it comes to raw milk, stay away from it. It's don't believe your lying eyes.
Well, exactly. I mean, meanwhile, Americans are fatter, sicker, and they're fatter and sicker than ever.
Yeah.
And they're telling us like, oh no, everybody's fine. Are you kidding me? Look around.
Yeah.
You have to do is look around, walk down the street.
CNN, bottom half of the body B-roll is all you need to look at. It's
it's crazy.
And that's why I'm happy we have individuals like you out there fighting the good fight, emboldening people with confidence, like my wife and others, to be confident enough to speak out about this because they feel better educated. And another thing, we just need to, that's one thing we've learned in Bitcoin, coming at the central banks, just ridicule them because they're objectively wrong. They're stupid. They're a detriment to the long-term health and quality of life of everybody, whether it's via debasing our savings by printing too much money or debasing our food by corrupting the incentives in the food system. These people need to be ridiculed. I mean, there is a degree of civility where people should come to the table and say, hey, these are the reasons why I think you should change your ways. But there's also, I believe, room to ridicule these people because that humor really connects with people very well too.
So, yeah, I love that. That's great. And there's a level of like holding them accountable. And also if we ridicule them enough, they'll hopefully be so embarrassed to be forced to make change, you know?
Yeah. Need to ridicule, embarrass them, shame them.
Yes.
Courtney, we're going to shame them.
I think shame back, dude. For real. We need it.
Yeah.
No more. We need a healthy level.
You can't gentle parent with these zealots that are centrally planning our lives. You need to shame them. We need to bring back bullying.
We really need to bring it back. I'm probably going to get canceled for that. But look, they need to be held accountable. And my thing is like, where is the outrage? Where is the outrage for this? Like more than shame them, we should be pissed off. They are knowingly poisoning us at this point. I would argue that I think that it started out with good intention. I really believe that. But we now know what this is doing to us. And now they are digging their heels in further. And I'm pissed off about it. And we should all be pissed off about it.
We should be. It's. I'm going to hold my words because I have some thoughts on what should happen to these people. But I won't say it on air. I'll just end. Like I've said this story many times on this podcast, but I had crazy autoimmune issues, particularly eczema, for the first 20 years of my life. And I had topical creams and steroids. It helped to no avail. And it was very embarrassing. Particularly in the fall, winter would flare up and basically my whole arm, all the way out to my armpit would be riddled with eczema. And it wasn't until I changed my diet in my early 20s, cut out red dye. I was a big Gatorade drinker. I cut out literally cutting out Gatorade and cheese for 2 years, just going to water, coffee, and the occasional drink on the weekend, solved my eczema. I haven't had eczema in 13 years.
That's so incredible. People need to hear stuff like that too. I have a similar story. I had a eczema under my eyes and I had this weird, it was actually never diagnosed, but I had some sort of, I think it was an eczema, like a different form of eczema on the back of my scalp. And when I went gluten-free, it completely went away and it has never come back.
Yeah. Yeah. It plagued me. It was something I was very self-conscious about for the first 2 decades of my life. And
I mean, that's it sucks. And then you go to the dermatologist and they give you a bunch of creams, but I'm sorry, that's not going to fix the internal issue. It's an internal issue. Yeah,
and then like the creams will like discolor your arm and stuff like that if you put them on enough.
Yeah.
You have like pale spots in your arm.
Oh, sucks.
Courtney, you're a busy woman. You got to get going. This was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I really loved this conversation. It was super fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Call to action for anybody. What should they be doing?
Yeah. I would say, first of all, help us cancel Kellogg's. So we're trying to turn this into a Bud Light situation. I'm not normally for canceling. Let me be real. I'm actually a huge hater of cancel culture. But in this case, I actually believe that if they're poisoning us, we need to do something about it. So if you want to join our coalition, you can go to my Instagram page. I have a ton of resources as far as like how you can get more involved in this movement. I mentioned earlier the thing with Callie Means. He just started a little coalition where people can get more involved. They sign up for emails and we can actually like connect you with senators and you can call your congressmen. And so there's many different ways that people can get involved. Help us cancel Kellogg's right now. You can go and share some of the videos, go and create your own videos if you want, share with your community, share in your stories, and let's get the word out that they don't have our best health in mind right now. Yeah. And then go to Real Foodology, on Instagram. And then I'm also on, I have a Real Foodology podcast. So if you guys want to listen and follow along there, yeah, that's how you can get involved.
Get involved, freaks. Peace and love.